going to be a great show today. I am going to be joined by some of my friends. It's going to be a little bit of entertainment, but for sure, some education. We're going to be joined by John Peters with the Sac Angels, Ken Tallow, who is also with the Sac Angels, my buddies there. Actually, all three are with the Sac Angels. Michelle Halston is also with the Sac Angels. Michelle brings the legal perspective. She's with Greenberg Traurig. Ken is launching a fund, and John, along with myself, has done a lot of early stage investing. And we're going to be talking about some of the mechanics that are involved in this early stage investing. We're going to be demystifying some of the terminology. It can be a little bit intimidating. And we're going to be talking about who should be an angel investor, who should be investing into this venture class, and then maybe really taking a thoughtful approach to maybe who is not the right fit, and maybe not the right fit at this stage. But I think for all of us, we all want to know more about how to get in this wonderful world of early stage investing. And today, that's what we're going to be talking about. So stick around, my friends. All right. Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. And today I am fired up is an understatement, but I have three people who you are going to need to know if you have interest in angel investing, or if you're an early stage company that is thinking about raising capital and you're considering, you know, maybe utilizing angel investing as a part of that funding strategy. So today we're going to attempt to educate you a little bit. There may be a little bit of entertainment with the trio that I have on board here, but hopefully along the way you feel some inspiration to consider where you might fit in to this world of angel investing that the four of us love. Today I have with me Michelle Halston. She is a shareholder over at Greenberg Traurig. I've got John Peters. He is, I think he's the man behind the Sac Angels. Then we got Ken Tallow, who is an angel investor who's starting his own fund, Winning Streak. But the four of us, we are all Sac Angels. And so I'm speaking today with three people who have really been leaders, including thought leaders here in Sacramento around this ecosystem that we're trying to build around angel investing. So if I could, I'd like maybe each of you to introduce yourself and maybe just give us a 30-second why you got into angel investing and what you're doing in this world of angel investing. Maybe we'll start with our attorney from Greenberg, Michelle Halston.
Well, thanks, Mark. First of all, as an attorney, a significant part of my practice is working with early stage companies. So I got very interested in angel investing by virtue of my law practice. And I joined the Sacramento Angels in 2003 and have invested in a number of companies over that period of time, and got into it primarily, well, for a couple of reasons. One, because of my law practice and I was interested in early stage companies, but I also got into it because as a, you know, just in terms of managing your assets and things as an investor, it's not a bad idea to have a certain percentage of your investments consist of investments in early stage or other, you know, high growth companies. Sometimes I feel I'm a little too concentrated with respect to retirement accounts and things in the stock market. So this is a way to, I think, a really good way to diversify.
We'll circle on to a little more on the why with everybody. But John, how about you? A little background on you and then how you got into Angel and why you do it, why you started initially.
Yeah, I think mine's probably a little less rational than Michelle's. Being very objective, analytical, return-oriented approach there. You know, I just love technology. I love business. It's been my career. I spent 30 years in the Bay Area in the tech industry, enterprise software companies, and was involved in a 20 to 30 M&A transactions for Hewlett Packard and BMC Software as either the initiator or the executor of the actual integration into our organizations. I've always enjoyed working with startups. And when I left that 30-year career, this was just the natural place for me to be. I just kind of fell into it at some level in terms of this is what I wanted to do. I was working with startups and small companies anyway, and I just fell into kind of the angel investing track, which I love. It just really, for all the reasons I think a lot of people get into it, they love getting, you know, staying current on the latest emerging business models and trends and technology developments. They love being able to share their career and experience to help others build business and economic opportunity. And of course, they want to make a pretty good return out of it too. So this is not fully a service opportunity. It's an opportunity to really make some money too. And that just adds to the fun on that. So
you bet.
That's kind of my story.
Ken, how about you? A little intro on you and why you got into angel investing.
So why did I do angel investing? So I did my first startup in my early 20s, and it was a great experience, a lot of excitement. It was a tech company, and like many tech companies, we failed, right? It was a great learning experience. I then dove into my career in corporate America, 25 plus years in the high-tech industry, semiconductors, avionics, aircraft, things like that. But at the time I was later in my career, I still had this desire to go off and work with these small companies. And as I did my own angel investing and working with these small startups, I realized it was becoming more of a hobby and more like less of a hobby and more like therapy, as I realized that these big corporations move incredibly slow, and the small startups can basically just change your whole direction tomorrow if necessary. And that's how we were operating these startups. And I got pulled in and drawn in, and you know, from my education through the SAC Angels, and you know, from my many mistakes as well as successes, I decided to make this now my career, started my own fund. I have partners here at Winning Streak. We all have our various areas of expertise and our own successful track records. And we just enjoy coaching and advising these startups. So again, we focus on tech startups, and it's now that hobby that's now a career. So I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
That's great. If you can do what you love, you know, you never work a day in your life, as my daughter tells me, and I sort of feel that way. And I was thinking about why I got into angel investing, probably as a hobby. And really, I think what I really enjoyed, especially at the beginning stages, is living vicariously through the founders. There's nothing like being around somebody who is completely immersed in their business. It's like they're in that at that most ambitious time of their life, giving it everything they have. And we as investors get to be around that. And I think at some level that's infectious. And I like the way it sort of rubs off on me in terms of invigorating my spirit to, and John, I think you mentioned it, to learn and be a part of a lot of cutting edge things. Now maybe just to educate people, Ken, maybe I'll stay with you on this. You've got the early stage venture capital fund. You know, can you walk us through, let's say, the where angel investing sort of fits into the cycle of investing opportunities, right? From friends and family all the way to IPO, right? Maybe can you tell us where angel sort of fits in?
Yeah. Angel's in that early stage, but typically what happens with any small startup, there's usually a founder or a couple of founders, and they're pretty passionate about going off and solving some problem that's that needs to be solved. Again, there's cases where people create solutions looking for a problem, but let's stick with those who are truly out there solving the problem. And they typically go to friends and family. And that's usually the so-called first round of investing, where you go to your friends and your family, you show them your idea, they believe in you, and they'll give you money to start developing, cultivating the idea, maybe actually prototyping or building out the product or service. And then with that research and basis, you then go to the next stage, which is really the seed rounds, where a lot of the angel investors come in. And those early angel investors, they understand that you may not have revenue. They understand that you may not have the entire business plan figured out, or even the true definition of your product or service, but they believe that there's something there. And if you take their money, I highly recommend taking the so-called smart money, which is not just a check, but also those angel investors who are willing to get their hands dirty. Those people who have expertise and knowledge and a network that can help you better your company, better your product. And so you do those early seed rounds, and I've seen a various, John can jump in here. We've seen their seed A, seed B, B, C, D, but eventually you go to that next round. I've seen some pretty clever things, John. I think we saw once at an Angels presentation, somebody did a seed awesome, right? They just had to name it something because they had done previous rounds. But you go to the seed rounds and then eventually get to the so-called series A, B, C, and I've seen those go all the way to G, E, and F. But those are where the bigger institutional investors come in, right? You do some seed rounds with angels. They'll help you push your company forward, take the product and the service forward, establish revenue, establish a customer base, and then you're into the bigger series ABC, where some of the venture capital firms, the smaller ones, sometimes come in first. They'll be writing out $1 million, $2, $3, $5 million checks. And then as you get to the later series BCD, you're into the bigger institutional investors, where they very well might write a check north of $10 million, $50 million, depending on how fast you're growing, what your product is, the team, and how quickly you're, you know, penetrating a new market.
Well, John, let's talk about that. So the early stage company that comes in, let's say the average company that might pitch to a SAC Angels, they're coming in, let's call it the seed round, pre-seed, is pretty early on. And then you got those A, B, C. If you could elaborate on that, is what's the valuation of a seed company? And then when they go to an A and a B and what is it, up to G or whatever this is, it's like, how much do they go up in value along the way? What can we expect to sort of pay for these type of companies?
Well, I think let me make one other distinction here. Is a seed round is often funded by angel investors. They're individuals or they're angel groups. Ken did a good job of laying that out. We see more and more institutionals going into seed investing in the last few years. There's a lot of money out there chasing, you know, where's the next big return that they can build.
And, an institutional investor, that's a venture capital company, right?
It's a venture capital company. Basically, an institutional investor raises money from a bunch of individuals, the limited partners, if you will. They build a fund, and then they adopt a thesis for what they're going to invest in against that fund. It might be med tech, it might be regional based, could be a variety of themes that they build up. And then they basically, in a very kind of coherent, kind of centralized criteria way, go after looking for companies to invest in through their fund. And then they incubate but advise the companies through the process. If you look at kind of the seed, let's say, level of this ecosystem or this life cycle, if you will, most of the companies that we see, and I'm just going to give you Sac Angel's kind of perspective on this, but I think it's pretty typical. You like to see some early revenue in the companies we're investing in. So we like to see a 250K, you know, kind of ARR level and above.
And that's ARR is?
Annual revenue rate or annual recurring revenue, depending on what kind of company that you're at. So 250K is kind of a table stakes in our agenda. We see companies all the way up to 4 or 5 million in annual revenue. So that's the range that we kind of live in, but mostly towards that 250 to a million plus kind of range. The valuations in that range can be anywhere from $3 million on kind of the low end up to $10 million that we see in kind of that seed stage area. Some are trying to get more than that, but that's kind of the general range that we tend to play in. And we invest through either convertible notes or direct price rounds, which is direct equity investments in those companies. So that gives you a sense for the level of company performance out there. Depending on the company, you know, if it's a med tech company that's on a regulatory track or, you know, we're interested, but we generally like it to be kind of a short path to regulatory approval, like a year away, and with a line of sight on potential fast exits. We don't like the long builds.
Michelle, bringing you in here on a couple of the terms John used, direct investment, convertible notes. Some people have heard of SAFEs. So when you go to invest into one of these early stage companies, the opportunity comes to us in this a variety of ways. How might we look at these different vehicles from an angel investor side, also from a maybe from a founder side? What's the best way to do that? Why do people offer the different vehicle?
Well, they offer the different vehicles depending upon sort of where they are in the fundraising cycle. Oftentimes, companies will want to do a convertible note or SAFE round before they do a seed round because they don't want to take a position on valuation of the company that early. So they will offer a convertible note in order to, you know, I'll get to SAFEs in a minute, but a convertible note gives the company the opportunity not to have to take a position on valuation, but in order to entice investors to come in, they will provide either a discount when the note actually converts into equity, and that discount is typically around 20%, which means that you just get extra shares when the note converts, or they'll offer a cap on valuation, meaning that the note will have some cap so that if, you know, the round, let's say, is at a $5 million, you know, pre-money and the note is capped at 3.5 million. So you're going to convert, those notes will convert at a lower valuation, which is better for the investor.
Yeah, you're basically buying your shares in and around that price range.
Exactly. And then the SAFE is a little bit different. I as an investor, I prefer convertible notes, depending upon the terms of the SAFE, because a note is a debt instrument. It goes to the front of the line in the event that there's some sort of bankruptcy or liquidation of the company, which you hope doesn't happen. But, you know, there's angel investing is risky. And sometimes you know, the company doesn't get as far along as it should before it has to shut down. But a SAFE is really a contract between the investor and the company whereby the company agrees to issue shares to the investor in connection with its next round, usually at the price in that round. And, you know, so a SAFE does convert, but it doesn't have the kinds of things that a note has, which is like a maturity date so that you know when that note is either going to be due or it has to convert. A SAFE can be just out there and there really is until the company has a round. You know, you're stuck with just an agreement that you get to get shares in that round. So, you know, sometimes SAFEs, investors negotiate them so that they start to look more and more like convertible notes because they have terms and they terminate at some point so that, you know, something has to happen with the company. It just can't, you know, this obligation issue shares just can't stay out there forever. But the reasoning, you know, behind this for the company, again, is especially with SAFEs and notes is they don't want to take a position on valuation. From an investor standpoint, depending upon the sweeteners, that can be acceptable. But if not, you're oftentimes better off getting a full priced round. So you know what you're, you actually know what you're getting in the valuation that you're investing at.
You use the term sweetener. Give me an example of what a sweetener might look like.
A sweetener would be like the discount. And typically the discount on conversion is greater the farther away the company is from getting around. So for example, if you've got a note that if you're expecting, you're raising money on a note, you expect to do your Series Seed or your Series A, whatever you're bridging yourself to, you're expecting to do that in 6 months, you may only offer a 10% discount or a 5% discount. If you're looking at a year or more before that round in which the note or even the safe will convert, you're going to try to negotiate as an investor a higher discount. And we've seen notes even structured where if the company doesn't do a round by a certain time, the discount increases incrementally up to a cap maybe of like 30% until the company does get that round. And part of that, I think, is also to incentivize the founders to, hey, get the round done, right? It's just not, you know, because being hanging out there on notes or safes for, you know, ad nauseum is not necessarily a good thing.
Ken, okay.
Mark, if I can add to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just to pile on to what Michelle said, there's a lot of creativity in these early stage investing rounds with the different instruments. From an investor standpoint, learning all of that is pretty tedious, and the nuances of all the small terms and conditions. But there are other things to consider. And one of the things that I've been favoring more over the years is just getting equity as quickly as possible, right? Because there are other advantages to having equity sooner, such as tax advantages, right? There's a long-term capital gains benefit. And then there's even another benefit called a 1202 tax exemption, where if you hold the stock for 5 years and the company is valued under $50 million and so forth and so on, there's a set of criteria. There's no taxes to be paid at the federal level. So having equity versus these convertible notes or safes has its advantages to the investor. And sometimes that equity investment is an easier vehicle to negotiate with the founders. But again, there's a lot of creativity in this space.
Okay, Ken, now this is getting pretty technical, right? Michelle's talking about this terminology. You've now bringing in the tax code. I can imagine some people out there listening might be thinking, okay, wow, you're right. This is a lot of information. I'm going to need to get educated. There may be even an intimidation factor. But what goes through my head is there are some people that probably aren't ready to be angels yet. It's still good to learn about it. So who should be an angel, right? There, we know that we've talked about the pros of being an angel, but I mean, Michelle mentioned it, it's risky. Who shouldn't be an angel?
So let's see. Let me see if I can answer this because there's a lot to that question. If you're interested in investing in early stage companies, first question would be is, are you an accredited investor? And there's a definition for that. You can go look it up, but that means you have certain wealth or income requirements. And therefore, as an accredited investor, you can be an angel investor and join an angel group such as the SAC Angels. Joining a group like that, you will be exposed to and have the opportunity to learn everything about selecting companies, doing due diligence on companies, angel groups like the SAC Angels. For myself and many of my peers in that organization have learned a lot about angel investing, and you learn what to do and not to do. So you learn from your successes and your mistakes.
I could imagine it's a little bit like playing poker. Hey, you don't want to be the guy that shows up at the poker game who's never played before, right? Yeah, and then exactly. You start betting a lot. You see what everybody else is doing. You're like, oh, shoot. So would you advise people to sort of dabble or walk before you run?
If you're the type of investor who wants to learn about angel investing, join an angel group. SAC Angels or others are usually in every local community. Find it, join, and roll up your sleeves and get involved. But there's also other avenues, one of which is through a fund, right? And so my funded winning streak is an early stage fund, right? Our investors, they're interested in early stage startup. They don't necessarily understand angel investing. So they're relying on myself and my team to do the diligence and make the selections. But they're also willing to, in some cases, roll their sleeves up and engage with these companies, which they enjoy doing. So there are funds you can be part of. And then, you know, over the years too, there's also crowdfunding, right? Which has really changed quite a bit. And even recently now there's a new reg, Reg CF, where they've restricted or lifted some of the restrictions on early investors. It used to be only accredited. Now you don't have to be accredited. And the limits of which you can invest have changed as well. But again, when you join these crowdfunding websites, right, and become a participant, you really need to do your own diligence. It is high risk and high reward. And unlike the stock market, where you might lose 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% here, your investment could go to zero.
Yeah. Now, John, the SAC Angels, I love, first of all, the leadership at the SAC Angels is a guy that's been in the SAC Angels for some time. I can see some of the changes that have occurred over the last several years. And I have to credit the leadership of the SAC Angels. And one of the products that you guys came up with, or one of the avenues for investing that you came up with over the last couple of years, is where we don't have to write such a big check. We don't have to write the $25,000 check or the $50,000 check individually. We can now write a check of $5,000 or maybe, you know, 5 to 10, or maybe have it be flexible because you kind of go in with a pool. Can you describe that, John?
Yeah, we put a what we call a multi-class LLC in place about 2.5 years ago. It basically allows our members to collect all of their investment into one transaction with a startup. The benefit for the startup is they get one cap table entry, they have one point of contact for SAC Angels, and it's a much more simplified experience. Sometimes they talk about angels as kind of a swarm of mosquitoes if they're all small investors, and they can suck up a lot of time. And so this makes that a much more efficient transaction for the startup. For the investors, it's also got a tremendous set of benefits in that it allows the group to get into deals that we might not normally get into that might have, let's say, 100K or 200K minimum. We can actually pull our money together and meet those minimums without us individually having to invest 100K, 200K. For people who are kind of early in their angel career, it allows them to build a portfolio. And we always recommend people have kind of an eye on building a portfolio of 10 to 20 companies. I see often early angels who try and go it on their own. They spend too much money on too few transactions with kind of, I'd call next door investing, who they know, and you know, it just kind of popped up in front of them, and they kind of go into it in kind of an ill-informed way, and they overrisk themselves by investing in a few companies. With an angel group and with the LLC instrument that we have in place, you can be more moderate with your investment, spread that over more investments, and you can benefit from the group's knowledge of doing transactions, as well as the visibility to multiple startups out there.
Well, give me
a
number.
It simplifies the investing and the tracking process as well, because we manage all the document retention and all the details around managing your portfolio over the life of the startup, which can be as much as 10 years.
Yeah. So let's talk. I want to dive just a little deeper, maybe to try to help the audience with the math problem here. So what percentage, maybe quick off the top of your head, what percentage on the, maybe on a conservative side, should someone consider having of their portfolio in something as risky as angel or this early stage investing? 5%?
10%? Conservative side, absolutely, 5%.
Okay, so that's kind of
your life savings and your net worth, you kind of want to stay in that 5% range. I'd say people who are kind of more early career that are part of our group tend to go a little higher because they have a bigger risk, you know, capacity. So they might do like 10% plus.
Okay, let's
use that. Kind of the range.
I've actually heard 10%. That's okay. But I agree, depending upon sort of where you are in your, you know, in your life, whether you want to put 5% or 10%, the younger you are, obviously you have more risk tolerance.
Okay. So let's talk about that, Michelle. So let's say you're worth 5 million. I'm just going to pick some math, you know, some easy numbers for math. Hey, I'm worth 5 million bucks. I want to put 10%, which may be a little on the high side, but I'm only let's pretend I'm 40, right? I'm only 40 years old. So I still have I have a few earning years ahead of me. So I'm going to put, I'm worth 5 million. And so I want to put 500,000 into this early stage, which is kind of sounds like a lot. And you want to dabble.
I think I would do it that way. And the reason is that I think that if you look at your net worth and some of that consists of your house and your car, your retirement accounts and your furniture and things, I'm not sure I would take the whole kit and caboodle and say 10% of that. What I would look at is saying, what kind of funds do you have for investment, right? Beyond your house and your car and kind of the essentials you need for your life. And take maybe 10% of that. So if you had a net worth of 5 million and you had maybe after your home and essentials, you had a couple of million dollars available that you can invest, whether it's in real estate, the stock market. So maybe of that, maybe you're looking at somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 that you would want to invest in early stage companies. And as John indicated, the only way that that's going to make sense is if you have enough diversification in the number of companies that you invest in, because putting all your eggs in one or two or three baskets doesn't make sense just statistically because of the percentage of companies who start out that just will not succeed or will not, they won't hit it or they won't hit it out of the park, right? In other words, they're not going to really increase that much in value.
Yeah. So you got $1 million in investable type of assets. Some of it, some of that million, you're going to put into the poker game, let's call it the angel investing game, you know, a little higher risk, potentially a lot higher returns. So now we're talking about more like $50,000, right? So right? It's $1 million, $100,000 being 10%. Now you get half of that's, $50,000. And you want to spread that over 30 companies. So in these 30 companies, it takes time to sort of get in. How would you go about that?
Yeah. 50,000 for 30 companies won't work. And I think John will jump in here probably, and so will Ken, I'm sure. And I mean, the issue is that when you invest in a company early stage, you want to be careful to have a little bit of dry powder on the sideline to put into that company down the road, because if it gets another financing, you may have the opportunity to invest in that subsequent financing, which you may want to do to protect your position from too much dilution. Because one of the risks that angel investors have when they invest, especially early on, in companies that have to do multiple rounds of financing, is you risk getting diluted almost down to nothing. So it's important that you, when you invest in a company, you might invest 5,000 or 10,000 initially, and then from there, you may be required to put in, or probably will be required to put in funds in additional rounds. So if you're looking at investing, let's say in 15 companies, that's your goal for your portfolio, I think you're going to need to start out with 100,000, and that 100,000 is not going to get invested all at once. It's going to happen over a period of time. I mean, John, I'm sure you have something to add on that.
Yeah, I'd be thinking more like 200,000. You got to be thinking you're going to put that kind of money on kind of the low side into what you're doing with angel investing. Otherwise, you're going to end up with this small numbers problem. And the problem there is that companies can look fantastic and they check all the boxes, but stuff just happens. Founder has a health issue, a new competitor emerges, the market disappears for some external reason you couldn't predict, and the companies go out of business. That's the nature of startups. And so you can't really see with certainty that you're going to get a return out of this. And I would say the statistical data shows that 2/3 of the startups that angel investors invest in return 1x or less. That means they got dollar for dollar what they invested or nothing in their investment. And so that's a big number. You've got to hit on the 3 to 5x's and the 10x's to make it really pay out for you. Yeah. And you should be thinking that this money is in there for 7 to 10 years. And so you're going to be doing this over time in small increments in a smart way with a balanced and kind of disciplined approach to build a return. If you play by all those rules, the average return that angels get is 20 to 25% IRR. So it can pay off in a big way.
So Michelle, Ken talked about the accredited investor, said go look it up. Do you have that off the top of your head, what the current level is to be an accredited investor in terms of income and or net worth?
Yeah, it's $1 million net worth. You can include your home, but you have to reduce what you include for your home by any mortgage on it. Or it's a couple hundred thousand in income for the last couple of years and a reasonable expectation of the same in the current year, or 300,000 income you can, with your spouse.
Okay.
So, and the thing about California is, for most people that have owned a home in California for any length of time, they're accredited investors.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it sounds to me, it feels like we're putting a little bit of realism to this thing that sounds really cool, because if you're worth just a couple $1 million, maybe $1.5-2 million, a lot of it might be tied up in your home, but you barely qualify to be an accredited investor, and you need to have 200,000 set aside to spread over 20, 30, 40, 50 companies, which is what I would suggest is the more companies you spread over, the better. So even 15 to 20 is a small number. 50 might be a more reasonable number to try to find. Thinking about that, Ken, you with Winning Streak, these early stage funds, you're getting into very similar companies that have just a little bit more of a track record, and yet you've got professionals doing this due diligence. And I mean, how should one decide whether it's like, look, I better dabble at the SAC Angels, or I better go see a guy like Ken Taller or one of the other early stage funds?
Yeah, great question.
I can't do both, right? I don't have that much money.
Right. Yeah. Great question. It has to do with your desire to learn the industry of angel investing, right? If you really want to learn it and do it yourself, then absolutely join an angel group like the SAC Angels. You will get that education. You won't get it all in the first year, but you'll get it over a couple of years or several years. It's going to take time. Again, you learn a lot by making mistakes, and you learn a lot by picking good companies. And of course, there's other members in the organization that have expertise and knowledge that you can leverage, and that's the huge benefit. But if you don't have the time or the desire, then you need to look towards a fund who has a management team that has a track record. They have hopefully have all the experience that you're looking for to do the diligence, because it is very time consuming. And you understand that most of these companies fail, as John shared, right? A lot of these early stage startups are very high risk. So you say no a lot, right? So we will look at hundreds of companies. Actually, when I was running selections at the SAC Angels, I was looking at 300 companies a year. And of those, we picked 16 to actually present before the group. And of those, John, you can confirm, we probably invested in half, which was a pretty good rate. So 8 out of 300 companies. And remember, of those 8, most might fail, right? So running a fund, same exact thing. We are looking at hundreds of companies every year. Our focus is tech companies, because tech companies, if they are done right and you're checking all the boxes, they hopefully have some intellectual property, some patents, some trade secrets, some know-how that no one else has, and that gives them a competitive advantage. Will they succeed? We hope, but you have to work with them and they have to work hard to stay ahead of the rest of the competition. And it's going to take time. As John stated, as Michelle stated, it's going to be years, not months, before they actually have an exit, which can be going public, which is very cumbersome, right? But a lot of companies, small companies today, are being acquired, and that seems to be the quicker avenue to exit.
Okay.
So I could just add to that, Mark, if it's okay. Yeah, the other thing I would say is, you know, you're thinking about, gee, do I do something like a fund or an angel group? I don't think it's an either or. A lot of angels invest in funds as well. It gives them broader visibility to opportunities, it builds relationships, and they get good returns out of funds. So I think there's definitely a place for that mix in a lot of angels. The other thing is that, you know, if you are looking at the angel opportunity, it's always good that you're bringing something to the table. Angel's a contact sport. You've got to somehow engage with your knowledge, your background. You got to be able to provide value to the startups. You're not going to do it in every case, but you want to be able to do that in some cases. And so we like angels who have something to bring to the table more than just their money. If you want to just bring your money, that's more of a fund type approach. And I'm not saying it's limited to people who just want to bring their money, because angels invest in funds too, but I'm just saying an angel investor is a contact player. They're actually involved.
Well, I've got a couple more questions for each of us, just to sort of make sure that we share real world stories as well. But before I get to some real world stories, maybe I'd like to get your sentiment on Sacramento. I think our audience knows that I am relentlessly local in my focus, invested into, I think, 40, 50 early stage companies. I think every venture capital fund in town, I'm a part of that at some level. And I like putting my money where my town is. It's sort of my thing, but it's been a great way for me to learn and have some fun and live vicariously. So that's me. But I've, you know, with this podcast and with the events that we've done over the years, I've had my ear to the ground, as have the three of you. And so I'm kind of curious as to the sentiment of the ecosystem, right? What is the landscape of venture capital, early stage investing, angel investing? I mean, we're right down the street from the most prolific investors in the world, in the Bay Area. And here we are in Sacramento, the government cow town. So our prolific angel investors are a heck of a lot smaller. But how's the landscape changing? What's the sentiment today as compared to maybe where it might've been 3, 5, 7 years ago? Who wants to take that one on?
I can give you my starting thoughts here. I think, with angel groups, people are number one wanting to have a good investment with a good return. That's going to be their top requirement. Second is they do want to impact the local economy and region where they can, but not at the expense of a good return. And for our group to get good, solid financial returns, we've got to cast a wide net. The old adage used to be a day's drive. That was kind of the way people thought about angel investing. They don't want to invest in companies they couldn't get to in a day. But I think, you know, you saw it with the COVID situation. People are thinking more broadly now, even than that. So we actually invest, I would say, 30 to 40% in the capital region, 30 to 40% in the greater Bay Area, and another 10, the math might not add up here, but another 10-ish percent outside that area. Why is that? It's because we're looking for the best possible return. It's a competition to get to that.
So
what I've seen happening in the capital region is over the last 5 years, I've definitely seen an uptake in the quality of startups that we're seeing. Remember, they meet a pretty high bar for us, and the talent that's coming to the region. People are not struggling as much as they were even just 5 years ago to get good quality talent to staff their startups with. So I'd say those
we're seeing more second and third generation, you know, entrepreneurs now. We're not just, you know, just not just the first rodeo for some of the startups that we're seeing, which is important locally, because it's always a lot risk. In my view, there's more risk investing in a startup where the founders, it's their first time out. And sometimes it takes, you know, founders a couple few times to fail before they're successful. So when you see, or you have someone who has been successful and they're on their third or fourth company, it seems to, it just seems to mitigate the risk somewhat. And at the same time, you know, for a long time in Sacramento, I don't think we were seeing that, but we're seeing a lot more of it now.
So when I talk to a founder and he says, or she says, or even anybody else in the community in the venture capital space, that there's really not a lot of money here in Sacramento. Everybody's invested into real estate here in Sacramento. I got to go to the Bay Area if I want to really get funded. How would you respond to that, Michelle?
You know, unfortunately, we don't have the presence here of a lot of institutional investors. We do have angel investors. We have some smaller funds and things. And we have some funds that are a little more, not so much in the high tech area. Like there are some funds that invest in companies that are a little more well established. And they look a little bit more like private equity, in my view, than they do venture or angel capital. But we still have, you know, one of the issues that we have to deal with is when we have successful startups in this area and they do get that institutional financing from the Bay Area, oftentimes the VCs will not want to do that, blaze the I-80 trail, right, to Sacramento, and they will try to move the companies into the Bay Area. So we still struggle with that sometimes. And, you know, it's just a problem of geography, I think.
Well, Ken, go ahead. Sorry, Michelle.
Go ahead. That's right.
Ken, you obviously saw a gap in the market, right? You decided to start a business that sort of feels that, I guess, that complaint that I mentioned offhandedly is like, where's the early stage money? Ken, you're starting a fund that is helping to deal with that. Maybe, yeah. I don't know if it's an inequity, but that perception obviously exists.
Yeah, no, you're right. There is a lot of money here in the Sacramento region, and they're looking for places to put it, right? And they want or have more tolerance for risk. And so it was really due to myself and my partners at Winning Streak being, you know, pushed by what are now our limited partners in the fund to provide them the opportunity to invest in these early stage companies with our guidance, right, and experience, because they don't want to do real estate necessarily as much as they were. They don't want to play the stock market like they have in the past. And while they were successful at that, again, they're looking for higher returns, right? And they're willing to accept those risks. And back to the earlier conversation around you know, this local environment here, it's interesting because our fund is focused on early stage tech startups. We do not have a restriction in any way, shape, or form on the location or geography of that small startup, but we find an enormous amount of leads here, our early stage pipeline of incoming companies here in the Sacramento area or the Bay Area or the West Coast. And then there are other pockets such as New York or Texas, right, where we see these pockets of
Austin. Companies.
Austin's a big one, correct. And so it's interesting. We have an ecosystem here of early stage startups looking for funding. We have the funding available in this region, and I see it now emerging more as people really get their head wrapped around the opportunity that comes with these early stage investments.
Okay, so this final question for each of you, and I'll ask you to sort of keep your answer to let's call it about a minute or so, but I want you to do it in the form of a story, if you don't mind. I want you to think of a memorable story of angel investing, and when I think of memorable stories, in every memorable story, there's some sort of emotion. It may be happiness, it may be gratitude, it may be pissed offness. In some ways, you know, every one of these memorable stories, they're memorable because of the emotion that that came through in that time. Who wants to start us off?
I'll start off.
Most memorable.
I have most memorable story. I invested in a company in 2003. I think it was 2003, shortly after I joined the SAC Angels. And I invested because it was more like affinity investing for me. And the reason I invested was because the company was involved in taking human breast milk and creating a product to help babies in the NICU. And their product, by taking human breast milk and pasteurizing it and turning it into a product that can be fed to babies in the NICU, it was allowing the babies, not only they were in the NICU for a shorter period of time, this is for premature babies, but when they got out, they had less developmental issues going forward as they grew up. So I thought, you know what? I was fortunate. I had three children. None of them ever wound up in the NICU or in the hospital like that. And I thought, you know what? If I can invest in this company and this company can help parents who have premature children, that's a good thing. So I invested in the company and I'm still invested in the company, but the company has been very successful and they have developed additional products depending upon how premature the baby is and things. And they've received all kinds of investment down the road. And it's been a good experience, and that makes me feel good because I feel like the company is actually doing something good. I don't know if you know much about premature babies and NICUs, but it's sort of one of those orphan markets for drugs and things because it's not big enough where a lot of big pharma and other entities want to get into it. But this company's been successful. It's also a lesson in how long you might wind up in a company before there's an exit. Because like I said, I've invested in 2003 and then some years. Additional money in over time.
You did it for love. You did it for love. You did it for the affinity of the cause, for impact. What's the feeling? Give me a one word answer. What's the emotion today, 17 freaking years later? What's the emotion?
Oh, if it goes public at $18 a share or something, I'll be really elated.
Elated. Love it. Love it. All right. Who wants to go next?
Yeah, I can give a story, but you know, it's not going to be as detailed as Michelle's because I don't really want to talk about the details too emotional, but I could just tell you that when I first started investing in startups, I came into it with a philosophy. I'm going to invest what I know, enterprise technology, and kind of stick to that game. And, you know, that's kind of, I think that's a pretty conventional story. And it turned out that was a terrible approach. Because the companies I invested in look good objectively. Maybe I was too passionate or close in the industry. I don't know. But in the end, those have been some of my worst investments. And the company I took a flyer on, those companies have been, in some cases, the best companies I've invested in. And I learned some valuable lessons through that on how important the founder is to the company, the market opportunity, and the true value proposition. How compelling is that they can deliver to the marketplace? Almost more than the details of the financials. You need to know the financials, but that founder, market, and value prop are really fundamental. And that's my school of hard knocks lesson, which I've written off in my taxes.
All right, so what's the emotion after this education?
Humility.
Love it, love it. All right, Ken, bring it home, baby.
I'll share one. I think Mark, you're familiar with. So it was early on in my angel investing career here. There was a company that really started from a student from a college campus, reached out to me, had this idea, and I thought it interesting enough to follow up. And we built a little company around, and we brought it actually relocated it here to the Sacramento area. And I was really excited that we were going to pitch in front of the Sacramento Angels. And pitch went really well. And none of the Sac Angels wanted to invest in it. And I'm sitting there thinking, I messed up. I just absolutely messed up because we have a bunch of very talented individuals in this room and no one saw what I saw. So I had a lot of doubt at that point and I decided, well, we're gonna stick through it. And the company grew and we made some changes on products and marketing and eventually some of the Sac Angels came around and they started investing in the company. And a couple of years later, it exited. It was acquired by a larger company. And you know, that emotion, that feeling of, did I mess up, right? Do I not understand something here? And all I can say is there are, you have to trust sometimes your gut, right? But you have to also rely on your experience and experience of others. Sometimes companies are too early, right? Great ideas, great technology, wrong timing on the market. Sometimes it's, the right timing on the market, but they just don't have the technology. But you stay focused, you stay committed, and coaching and advising these companies really makes a huge difference. So, it's those kind of experiences that continue to resonate, in my head and make me continue to push forward because we're always looking for these opportunities that ultimately one day are going to pay off.
And so maybe give us the emotion now. I heard some doubt or you second guessed yourself. And now the young man that we're talking about or you're talking about, what's the emotion now that you've seen the success that he, how he proved everybody wrong, maybe everybody but a couple of us?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's always a great excitement and joy after you've gone through that exit and you can really then see what you've accomplished and what he accomplished. But yes, there's certain times you're gonna have a lot of doubt. And you may feel some pain because there are mistakes that are being made, but work your way through it. Surround yourself with people who are positive and supportive. That's true for founders. It's also true for angel investors. And you keep pushing forward.
John, Michelle, Ken, thank you for what you do. Thank you for joining me on the Mark Haney Show. Thank you for your friendship. And I look forward to collaborating on each of your endeavors and enjoying the vicariousness that that I get out of early stage angel investing alongside of you three. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Great. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for having us.
Great show today. I think there were a number of takeaways. And I think really the one thing to remember is not everybody is ready to be an angel investor at this point, but it's still good knowledge because I think we want to be informed about this startup community. A lot of us want to be involved in it. Some of us want to be investing into it. But I think as we think about angel investing, it's like it's good to help these early stage companies to succeed because as they succeed, really we all succeed in terms of economic growth. And when it comes to what's really going to make an impact for the future of Sacramento's economy, it really is going to be around the success of the entrepreneur. So if you want more information about this, come see me. I'm in Rockland. I have a co-working facility. You can swing by, say hello. Yeah, you might have to wear a mask with what's going on these days, but you know what? Get involved with me. Shoot me an email. Get in touch with me because as entrepreneurs, I want you to know, or investors, we want to help you succeed. So anyway, never above you, never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.